where I was going to comment, but I couldn't, I'm not good enough. I noticed some people can do speeches off of it.
House Committee on Revenue for Tuesday, April 7th, 2009 will come to order. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2970. Chris?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2970 creates a 13-member task force on the utilization of the Earned Income Tax Credit with the goal to increase, through education and outreach, the number of eligible taxpayers who actually claim the credit. The bill specifies membership and voting details and requires the task force to develop recommendations for ensuring that state agencies work together to maximize the use of the credits while reducing redundancies. The bill also requires the task force to submit a report to the Interim Revenue Committee by October 1, 2010, and requires the Department of Revenue to provide staff support, and it appropriates money from the general fund. Currently, that amount is blank in the bill.
Very good. We have some august members, or at least a member here, who I assume wants to be heard. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I hope it's all right. I've asked Mr. Leachman to accompany me in case there are questions that he would be better able to answer. You have already heard another bill about the Earned Income Credit or Earned Income Tax Credit. My bill is meant to be complementary to that bill. It is not competing with that bill, and it's not a substitute for that bill. This bill is about increasing participation. What I've prepared is an amendment, and I'm going to tell you about that amendment shortly. The Federal Earned Income Credit was enacted in 1975 with the goal of refunding payroll taxes to low-income taxpayers. The Oregon EIC follows the same pattern as the federal credit and piggybacks on the federal EIC. The amount of the state and federal credit varies with income and the number of children. Nearly two-thirds of the Oregon families who receive the credit earn less than $20,000 a year. This morning, I'd like to talk about the Oregonians who are not receiving the credit that they've earned. The number of people eligible to claim the EITC is called the participation rate or utilization rate. Not everyone who's eligible to receive it is actually doing so. There are two predominant reasons from what I've found. Failure to claim it on a tax return, or just as likely perhaps, is simply not filing a tax return. Some people mistakenly assume that because they don't earn enough money to pay tax, they just don't need to file a return, and that there's no harm in not filing. They just don't realize that there is money that they could actually get back that they've earned. Or they are unsure how to file, and they are discouraged that to get help to understand and learn how to file, they would have to pay money to file a tax return. As a member of Ways and Means, I've been keenly interested in maximizing the federal dollars coming into Oregon. The reasons are obvious. More direct assistance for Oregonians, reducing the burden that Oregon carries on its own, and from the dollars that circulate in Oregon as the federal money comes in. Consider how hard we work on the demand for funding food banks, emergency shelter, low-cost housing, and health care. Some of the people needing those services are likely eligible to receive the Earned Income Credit. So what is the participation rate, and how can we influence it to improve it? Utilization of the EIC varies among different types of tax filers, single or married, number of children, and other characteristics. The Federal Government Accounting Office estimated that the percentage rate of participation is 45% for filers without children, 96% for filers with one child, 93% for filers with two children, and surprisingly less, 63% for filers with three or more children. Our Legislative Revenue Office advises that while precise reasons for not claiming the credit are not known with certainty, there is some evidence to suggest that most of the eligible non-claimants do not file tax returns. Some research has also indicated that a large share of EIC recipients use a tax preparer to file their return. The costs associated with using that tax preparer may provide some disincentive. Oregonians for Working Families tells us, quote, by helping publicize the EITC, you can help your constituents access tax credits they deserve. No eligible Oregonian should miss out on the EITC or other tax credits. Children First for Oregon says, quote, all of the state and federal tax credits available to families and businesses are underutilized. An estimated 25% of families eligible for the EITC do not file and receive their benefits. Oregon should increase its outreach efforts and expand the availability of free tax preparation for low-income families. That's precisely what I've written a bill to do. We hear from Oregon's Hunger Relief Task Force, quote, increasing the state EITC percentage will help low-wage workers and our state. Low-income families often live paycheck to paycheck. Tax relief will be spent on food, housing, health care, and utilities. Again, this is what I'm trying to address. We're being called on to help improve the utilization or participation rate, and that's what we can do today. The federal EIC is important for about 1 out of 7 taxpaying families. For the 2006 tax year, the federal EIC returned to Oregon was $362.5 million. For that tax year, over 206,000 families claimed the EITC, but that was considered to be about only 72% of those eligible. If we achieved, for example, a 10% increase in usage, there is the potential for 20,500 additional claimants, bringing in an additional $35.9 million federal dollars to Oregon. So what you have in front of you is an amendment that I prepared to reflect our best thinking on how to make this work and how to move forward even in this time of severe budget constraints. What the amendment does is it removes the allocation of money. It redirects the effort from the Department of Revenue to a group that's much more able and, in fact, already prepared to work on this, the Interagency Council. The amendment replaces 48 lines of text with just 25. On the flip side, you see the amendment slightly reduced. I hope it's still legible for you so that you didn't have to flip over to 2 pages. So given all of the statistics on the utilization rate or participation and how we can increase federal dollars to Oregon, my bill provides clear direction to state agencies to work together to collaborate and to increase the number of Oregonians claiming the earned income credit. We have several state agencies that do work on this or can provide information about it, and a number of private organizations around the state that do this for limited geographic areas. What we don't have is a concerted, coordinated approach to develop a good comprehensive plan for outreach. We should eliminate duplication of effort as each agency and organization writes and rewrites materials one at a time and schedules their own independent information campaigns. We should be able to achieve economies of scale for printing and publicizing information. We should be sure taxpayers hear about free tax preparation assistance that's available to them. Oregon's Hunger Relief Task Force tells us, quote, Oregon's tax system is hardest on low-wage workers. The answer is the earned income tax credit, end quote. Let's help them and help the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness do their job and get more help for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Leachman, do you want to be heard this morning?
Chair Barnhart, I am signed up for my own testimony as well.
Thank you. Here to help right now. Any questions for Representative Nathanson? Did you want to say any more about the plan in the Dash 2 amendment?
Yes. In discussion with the agencies, in trying to reduce the burden on the agencies and on housing and community services, what the amendment does is it clarifies that this bill, if you adopt the amendment, would instead it's a more clear direction to that particular agency, Housing and Community Services, to play the lead role for coordinating the effort. From what I understand, this is their main mission, to coordinate efforts among state agencies. It falls within their purview and jurisdiction, in my estimation. They already have, or have had in the past, annual meetings to address topics such as this, so I believe that adding this very clearly in their scope is something that they likely would have discussed, but if you will, it gives a little bit of heft or weight to when they call a meeting, making sure that the other departments participate at a level that the legislature would expect to be sure that these things are coordinated and that we reduce duplication or redundancy of effort. It also allows them, and I certainly would think that they would be encouraged, to invite the participation of the non-governmental organizations who are already doing lots of work around the state. But again, it's not coordinated under one umbrella to make sure that we're reaching out in the best and most efficient way.
Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nathanson, the one thing I notice in the bill, in the amendment, and I'm looking only at the amendment right now, is that it directs the Housing and Community Services Director to convene this, but it doesn't direct the agencies to attend. So I'm wondering if that's a something that we should attend to.
Mr. Chair and Representative Riley, I would be happy to work with the committee on any amendments that the committee felt were appropriate. I would expect that the departments would be pleased to attend because it might actually help relieve some of the burden that's on them. But you're correct in noticing that I did not add that as part of the text.
Thank you. Finally, the $64 question, what's the likely fiscal, if you know, on the Dash 2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I do not know. I am encouraged that the amount of federal dollars we would be bringing into Oregon would result in a very large net gain to the state.
Right. Well, the reason I asked the question, of course, is that if the department was departments involved were to tell us that they would pursue this within the mandate they already have and within the funding they already have, then I think the fiscal gets to zero. If that's the case, then it probably doesn't require a referral to the Ways and Means Committee. On the other hand, if there is a fiscal, because they need to expend effort that they wouldn't otherwise have to expend, then, of course, it would have to go there for further consideration. And, of course, you know better than I do how difficult that process is this year. Representative Riley.
And, Mr. Chair, it occurs to me that part of the fiscal on this is how successful they are. While we will be bringing in federal dollars, we'll also be expending state dollars.
Of course, because of the way the system works, that's a revenue impact rather than a fiscal impact.
True.
Mr. Chair, with regard to the fiscal impact, because the Interagency Council already convenes meetings, because there is already work underway, because they already do make reports, I believe that there should be no additional fiscal impact. I would be disappointed to learn that there needed to be a fiscal impact. I would hope that because agencies are already taking on the responsibility of providing information about the earned income credit, that substituting meetings called by an agency that is convening a coordination meeting, substituting attending that kind of meeting rather than attending meetings in their own department should really be a net gain, not a net loss.
Thank you. And it occurs to me that if this works properly, it's quite possible that administrative costs may decline over the long, at least over a biennium, rather than increase. It occurs, as you just were talking, A couple of the things I wrote down were streamlining administration, increasing accountability. So this may be good from a fiscal point of view rather than a cost. I take it, because of the way you've presented this, that you would propose that the committee adopt the Dash 2 amendment, which is a substitute bill.
Yes, I would, Mr. Thank Chair.
Thank you. Anything else for Representative Mathenson? Let's hear from Megan O'Connor, Rick Bennett, and Mike Leachman.
Thanks. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, panel. My name is Megan O'Connor. I'm the Director of Volunteer Development with United Way of Lane County in Springfield, Oregon. It's my pleasure to be with you this morning, and thank you for the opportunity to support House Bill 2970. Earned Income Tax Credit and its companion, the Child Tax Credit, are the most successful methods of providing low- and moderate-income workers and families with the funds to increase their financial stability. Whether the funds are used to pay back utility bills, to repair a vehicle, or to set something aside for education, a home safety net, or a home purchase, these credits have the ability to substantially better the lives of many of our most vulnerable friends and neighbors. Outreach and access to free tax preparation assistance are the fundamental tasks of the work of the Financial Stability Partnership that was convened at United Way of Lane County over 2 years ago. This partnership includes business, government, agency representatives, banking, education, faith communities, and interested volunteers from all walks of life. The challenge of this group remains the same: outreach, making sure that everyone knows about Earned Income Tax Credit and Child Tax Credit, the information on access to free tax preparation assistance, supporting the community with adequate numbers of trained and knowledgeable people that are available to help with tax return preparations, and make sure that those tax sites are accessible during the day, evenings, and weekends. The third point is to be sure that information and support is given to our business partners around advanced earned income tax credit. That's the ability for an employer to pay out the earned income tax credit in advance of the money that comes back when the taxes are reported. It's a benefit to the employer, it is a benefit to the employee, and it will help stabilize a workforce. In Lane County last year, tax year 2007, with the filing done in 2008, the 13 AARP tax aid sites and the VITA site at the University of Oregon filed 7,198 returns. Of these, 1,861 were EIC eligible, and that returned over $2.1 million to Lane County. And these are the free tax aid sites only. These are not the paid providers. There were 811 CTC beneficiaries, bringing back another $1 million. The IRS estimates that we are capturing between 75 and 80% of those eligible. That's absolutely wonderful, and certainly is bringing a substantial amount of revenue back to the state of Oregon. My question is, what about the other 25%? And how can we best capture them and be sure that they have the money in their pocket that they are eligible to receive? United Way has had great partners in its financial stability partnership work. Certainly at the top of that list is the IRS and AARP Tax Aid. We also have the City of Eugene. The city has been providing time and talent and funding for radio spots with Eugene area radio stations, who for a fee that is a matched fee of about $2,000. We receive about $10,000 in airtime. This work began in the mid-70s and was championed by then City Councilor Nancy Nathanson. The City of Springfield has been a partner for the past 2 years, allowing us to reproduce flyers that can be stuffers with utility bills, and we have had almost all of the utility companies in Lane County go to their boards of directors and overturn their decision not to have any stuffers in their utility bills because it opens a door that they don't choose to open. But in adding the EIC flyers, they have overturned that to make sure that their constituents know that tax credits are available to them. The third partner, of course, is Selco Credit Union and Lamar Advertising. We have been able to purchase taillight advertising, and our television and media partners have been wonderful in running PSAs and in news magazine-type interviews about the tax credits and the free tax preparation work being done. This is an example of the kind of thing that I believe that House Bill 2970 brings to you to do statewide, the kind of thing that we're now doing in Lane County. And this is wonderful work that's being done. As an AARP tax preparer myself, I have the privilege of the opportunity to celebrate with a single father of three children who was recently laid off, and when his taxes were done, he found that he was going to be all right for the next 3 months as he continues to look for work. The family who can get a car fixed because they have enough money coming back that they can put the money into the car to make sure that they can get back and forth to work, again, creating more stable workforce and stabilizing the family. And third, the taxpayer who said to me after we finished her return, "Are you sure this is right? If it is, I can actually put something aside and it would really change my life. I could sleep better at night." There are more stories out there, just like that, some more poignant. There are successes, and there are successes yet untold. The Center on Budget and Policy states that there are six key elements: to distribute information about tax credit and about free tax filing help, to enlist partners in the outreach through their networks and seek their contributions, to conduct outreach events and create opportunities for workers to get help with their returns, to increase the number of free tax preparation sites and improve the services they offer, to keep the public eye on this work, and to work at sustaining the outreach effort. All of us in Oregon working together to see that earned income tax credit and child care tax credit, together with free tax assistance, remains available in conjunction with House Bill 2970, will keep our eye on the economic prize. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Gentlemen.
Okay. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Mike Leachman with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I just want to start by thanking Representative Nathanson for her commitment and doggedness on this issue. She's really been a champion on it. It's really important. I really appreciate it. The Oregon Center for Public Policy has is similar, we're kindred spirits on this. We have a long-standing organizational investment in EITC outreach. Several years ago, when our organization was first getting going, we did our own outreach effort and put together posters and flyers and helped encourage state agencies to do outreach on the EITC. Since then, there's been more growth in nonprofit efforts to do that, and we're a small staff. It's with primarily a research mission, and so we've backed off from doing that. But we continue to have a commitment to the importance of outreach and the importance of making sure that everybody who's eligible for this credit and other credits that are available for low-income families get them. You know, we really, having statewide coordination of EITC and other tax credit outreach is really crucial. We unfortunately don't have that today, but having it would really create a much more efficient system, as Representative Nathanson mentioned. Today we have a program, Cash Oregon, operating in the metro Portland area. Does a very good job, but it's focused on the Portland metro area. The efforts of the United Way in Lane County are excellent, but just focused on Lane County. The National Women's Law Center has funded some efforts through the Child Care Resource and Referral Network statewide, but again, those are not connected very well to the other efforts that are happening in Lane County or in the Portland metro area. The AARP does helps to coordinate tax aid sites that help low-income families access the EITC and other credits. State agencies are involved to some extent in trying to coordinate their efforts and in publicizing information to their recipients of their programs, but again, nobody's pulling that all together, and that means that we have different groups who are thinking about how do we explain what these credits are. And then developing materials that are separately printed. Because many of the materials are translated into different languages, that's happening in different places in the state, and all the groups are paying translators separately. There's different information on different websites. And it leads to other types of inefficiencies. The National Women's Law Center posted as a phone number for people to contact for more information about the EITC, the Department of Revenue's phone number for information, while the AARP runs a phone number to connect people to tax aid sites. That is, it's a number that's where it's easier to get help through that number, and it would have been a better number for the National Women's Law Center to list on their materials. But because this whole effort's not getting coordinated, that didn't happen. And of course, then there's just large parts of the state where there's not a Cash Oregon, or there's not a Lane County United Way who are really doing that type of work, helping people get connected to these credits. Representative Nathanson made the point, and I wanted to emphasize that the bills shouldn't be considered a substitute for increasing the size of Oregon's small EITC, and I wouldn't want anybody to imagine that Oregon's EITC has a participation problem that needs to be fixed before we can think about expanding the small state credit that we have. A little bit about participation rates. The IRS, the Brookings Institution, and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, the latter two being the two leading think tanks that focus on this issue nationally, all have estimates of national participation rates that fall between 75% and 85%. So, it's a pretty good participation rate, it's very difficult to nail down what the participation rate is. We just don't have the data to do it precisely, and it gets more difficult at the state level. But the best state level study that we have suggests that Oregon's participation rate is higher than the national participation rate. And it's worth mentioning that the participation rate among families with children, who are the primary focus of the EITC, is higher, even higher than the overall participation rate. The rate is pulled down by families that don't have children. Those families are only eligible if they have very low incomes, and they're only eligible for a relatively small credit. Because, again, the focus of the program is really to get assistance primarily to those families with kids. So the participation problem really is the vast majority of people are people who aren't filing a tax return because they don't have income that's high enough to do so, the participation rate is especially low among childless workers. So we don't have a participation rate problem, but we still have a significant number of people who are eligible who aren't getting this credit or other credits that help low-income families. And it's important that we do everything that we can to make sure that those people get the support they need, especially in these hard times. And again, just having a statewide coordinated approach to this effort would be a significant advance and make our overall effort in Oregon, both within state agencies and in nonprofit groups, more efficient. I finally just wanted to mention that we can look to other states for better models. Michigan, for example, has a statewide EITC coalition. Theirs is funded by the State Department of Human Services, and it's administered by a statewide coalition of human service nonprofits. It would be the it would be similar to our Human Services Coalition of Oregon, along with a state university there and a legal aid group. And what they do is coordinate outreach on EITC and other credits that help low-income families. They also help people get connected to the free tax aid sites, and they also promote financial stability, discourage the use of rapid refund loans, which take a significant chunk of the of money. A significant number of EITC filers use rapid refund loans and pay a fee, a pretty hefty fee, to get them. So that's the sort of thing that we could be doing in Oregon. I don't believe that there should be a fiscal on this effort. It's something that, as we've mentioned earlier, will pay us back in increased efficiency in families that are more stable and therefore less have less need for public assistance. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. One of the good things about waiting until others have spoken is that there really isn't too much left to be said. AARP's tax aid program has been mentioned several times, so I don't really, unless you need additional information about the program, I won't go into that either. Let me just say that AARP supports this bill with the Dash 2 amendments. I am very concerned, as I've mentioned to you before, about the state's current revenue situation and its impact on current services and programs. And I've been tried to be very sensitive to that in my support of any new initiatives. But I believe with the Dash 2 amendments, there is little or no fiscal impact related to this bill. I think its efforts to coordinate agencies and non-governmental organizations, which I assume would be AARP's tax aid program, I think will be of great benefit and certainly help to identify additional people who are eligible and qualified for the earned income tax credit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony this morning. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on House Bill 2970? Yes, please. Come forward.
Good morning. My name is Roberto Franco. I work with the Oregon Housing Community Services Department in the office director, and he can't be here today, so I'm his representative. We do support the concept of the bill. Granted, they're still waiting to hear from our budgets to see where we are as an organization, as an agency. There is the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness, that's true, but it's not funded, it's not in the governor's budget by any means. So all of the agencies that participate in it work on the issues of hunger and homelessness. So from our director and in our office, we do support it. And we could do a lot more if we had the resources to do with all of what can be done. But given where we are, I think there's still opportunities that we can find within the work that we're able to do.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I'm very pleased to hear that the department is here and has comments on the bill. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on Deborah, the Department of Revenue? Ms. Buchanan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, just
to the administrative and the fiscal. I know we're taken out of the dash two amendments, but we do spend a good deal of resources in verifying that taxpayers have correctly claimed credits, including the earned income credit and, in particular, the working family credit. And we think that whatever can be done to help make those more accurate on the front end will reduce our costs in the long run. So we're very pleased to offer whatever assistance we can in making this work, should you decide to go ahead and adopt the amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? That's a wrinkle I hadn't thought of. If the returns are properly prepared at the beginning, it reduces your costs.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We would anticipate that the more we can get them accurate on the front end and the more assistance we have from other groups in helping ensure that taxpayers are claiming those correctly, the less work we would have to do on the back end in auditing, adjusting, issuing billings, and trying to collect the money.
And you do a fair amount of that, I think, don't you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, which was why I was pleased to hear that it isn't only the earned income credit that they would try to enhance outreach efforts, but other tax credits that are available to low-income taxpayers, such as the Working Family Child Care Tax Credit.
Right. Oh, I see. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Anyone else on House Bill 2970? If not, we'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2970 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3057. Hey.
Morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee. House Bill 3057 authorizes counties to designate educational development zones in which graduates of Oregon post-secondary institutions may defer payment of property taxes on newly purchased homes. It directs Director of Economic and Community Development Department to adopt rules directing counties in designating zones and establishing criteria for eligibility. And it directs Director of Department of Revenue to adopt rules establishing terms of and procedures for claiming tax defer. And it applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2010 and takes effect on 91st day following adjournment sine die.
Thank you, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27. Appreciate your willingness to hear this bill. It is perhaps the shortest bill I've been associated with, and that indicates a couple of things, one of which is I think it may need some additional work. But my hope is that today I can share with you the concept and the intent, and we can assess whether it has merit and whether the additional work it might require is worth doing in this session. Let me start by reminding you of a couple of things you probably already know. The value of a college education, just in some brief research over the last couple of days, I found some rather amazing statistics. The difference between a high school graduate, lifetime earnings for a high school graduate and a college graduate, very significant, 80% in one study I found, multi-millions in others I found. And that, so underscoring the importance of getting people to go to college. Within Oregon, the question is how we're doing on that. The Oregon Progress Board reported that we were making good progress in the 90s, but that has flattened since then. The goal, of course, according to the Progress Board, is to get about a third of the Oregon population to achieve a bachelor's degree or higher. This bill doesn't address the difficulty of getting people to college. There are lots of other bills that do that. But if we start thinking about what happens after a person has earned a bachelor's degree, the last thing we'd want to do is invest in that process and then see the person leave. Important, I think, too, to think about the distribution of college graduates around the state, the roles that they play, and to think about the things that communities need that can come with college graduates. We need entrepreneurs, we need public servants, we need doctors, teachers, firefighters, nurses, police. This is intended to be an optional program to give local jurisdictions an additional recruiting tool. It's not a mandate intended to defer property taxes on a principal residence. It would be great, of course, if we could offer the local jurisdictions the opportunity to create a grant program, but I recognize the challenges we're in the current situation and the ongoing challenges of local jurisdictions, so my intent would be to offer a deferral, probably with interest. And I think there's real reason to feel good about this opportunity, that as it could work both for rural areas and for urban areas that are seeking an influx of intellectual talent. So that's the intent of the bill, the short story. And I'd be eager to hear your reactions and try to answer your questions. I'm sure there are many about this bill.
Thank you. Question, Representative Broom.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Reed. I love what you're trying to get at with this bill, which is not losing college graduates. And I assume that's the primary, this isn't my question, but I assume that's the primary. It's not to encourage young people to go to college that otherwise wouldn't, but to keep them here after the fact. Is there anything that prevents a county from doing that now? They may not have a state designation to call it an educational opportunity zone or whatever the designation is, but could a county, say Washington County, do that now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broom, my understanding, the beginning of this bill, I asked that question too, and my understanding is that there does need to be a state law to allow it for this purpose. I'm not as well qualified to speak to that as I would like, but my understanding is that yes, we do need to do it.
In a follow-up,
please.
Different question. My only fear about this is that from an antagonist to this would say you're setting up educational elite zones, and how do we respond to that? Because once again, I applaud what this bill is trying to get after, but that would be the pushback that I could see is you're just making an elite area for college educated folks that doesn't, you know, that won't attract non college educated folks.
It's a good question, Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin. I think one of the things that jumped out at me very quickly when I saw the draft is that there are at least a couple of things that need to be further defined. One of which is probably a sunset zone, in keeping with the tenor of the other discussions we've had on tax credits, and the other is further discussion about what the criteria might be to determine such a zone. My thought would be once a zone reaches parity or a certain level, it wouldn't be eligible anymore, so that we could help bring various areas up to the goal and sort of representation, and that might no longer be eligible.
Well, that. So, Mr. Chair, if I may, so the idea here, though, is, I mean, I'm taking Washington County, I think your district has a proportionally high number of citizens that have college degrees. The intent here is to go into areas within the state that something less than the average? I guess I missed that in the testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, that would be my intent.
Okay.
Find those under-doctored counties, for example,
right.
Other places
right.
That don't have the number of college graduates that would serve the needs of their community.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Richard. I apologize. I had to step out of the room. And my question was, this says from Oregon institutions. Is that something that we can actually do? And in other words, if someone comes from UCLA and wants this, can we deny it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I believe that is a choice that we can make.
Okay.
Interesting question, though. Other questions for Representative Reed? We do have some other people who'd like to be heard on the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate
Mr.
your presenting this. Let's hear from Doris Penwell first.
We're missing a member.
Tina. Where's she at? Yes.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Doris Penwell, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here not necessarily to support or oppose any kind of a bill, but for sure to discuss this germ or concept that might be further developed. Because it says counties, that's one of the reasons I'm here. the bill sort of leads you to believe, as it is written, that this concept might be housed and overseen by the Economic and Community Development Department. And part of that reason may be because there are enterprise zones that are overseen by that department. And this has the bill itself definitely relates to needing to retain and attract skilled workers in locales in Oregon so that the communities can prosper and that people can settle and raise families and keep Oregonians in good paying jobs. So, but I want to talk about a few things that you might consider with this kind of a bill. First of all, this would allow localities, whether they're counties or cities or whomever, to designate an area or the whole county as a targeted zone, quote, zone, for educational encouragement. It definitely relates to the need for skilled workers, and in some places here in Oregon, you definitely need more skilled, more educated workers in order to attract business to start with. So definitely, you know, this is one of the areas that we should continue to be looking at with our workforce development experts around the state. The concept, though, does discuss deferment of property tax rather than abatement, as in an enterprise zone or some of the other incentive programs that we have at the local level. So, anyway, I think it might be a good idea to get a few people that are involved in these kinds of issues together and to further explore this, whether this is finalized this session or maybe sometime in the future. It does get at an issue that we are struggling with here in Oregon. And some of the questions I think we might want to consider in this discussion are, how long would this kind of a property tax deferment last? Does the state pay the tax to the communities, as in the senior property tax deferral, and then place a lien on the property and get their money back when the property is sold or people can pay it back? Does the locale that sponsors the effort give up the property tax in the early years, or do all the overlapping taxing districts share in the deferment? I'm not sure, and you'd have to establish a program that says that one way or the other. And as I said before, the concept sort of indicates that Economic Development Department might be the department that oversees the program, but maybe there's another place that this might be a better placement. I don't know that question. I think you would want to consider if the entity that sponsors such a program would target particular skills or professions where you really need this information in order, or this expertise in order to develop an industry in the area or generally improve the economy in the area. It's not unlike trying to recruit doctors to an area that are just simply don't have, you know, the professional skills in an area that we drastically need in Oregon. That's a different kind of a program, but, you know, this is pretty similar in terms of an idea. The other thing you might consider is, are there parts of Oregon where it might be needed more than others? Rural, urban, remote areas, da-da-da-da-da. That's one thing to consider. And also, I think generally, in order to develop this further and to talk about it, I think you do need the workforce development people involved, a lot of the people that work in the areas around Oregon that are trying to recruit businesses and have dire need for more funding for workforce development, more need for attention to that aspect and not just rely on federal assistance in that regard, but the state assistance. The other thing you might consider is that it's not just higher ed that's needed. Maybe it's skill training. I mean, professional skill training at community colleges or other areas where there are specific skills that you must have that you might gain at a community college. So I'm not sure it ought to be limited just to college-educated folks that go to institutions in Oregon, higher education institutions in Oregon. But anyway, those are a few of the things I think I'd think about and would love to work with people to talk more about it.
Questions? Sounds like you have the beginning of a work group, Representative.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let's see. Marcia Kelly, Jody Weiser, Sean.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I come here before you today as the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. Doris Pinwell questioned some of the same things that I would question about this bill. There's no income level. The property tax, senior property tax deferral has an income level. There's no timeline. And it's unclear whether the bill is trying to give college graduates, recent college graduates, a leg up in buying a home. It just says college graduates. You know, I'm a graduate of a university in Oregon, Willamette, albeit 40 years ago. It doesn't say the first-time home. And if you're trying to get at people locating in a community that needs professional services or a highly educated workforce, I think that you could get at this by making sure the communities are healthy, with strong educational systems, with arts programs, and with a community that's not struggling to survive. There are tax credits for medical professionals in rural areas, so, you know, income tax credits, a more immediate thing. And I just think that there are just too many questions to let this bill go forward the way it is. It really needs a lot of work. You need to figure out where the money's going to come, if you're going to pay the counties and the other taxing districts that, as we speak, are struggling, before you decide to defer money that they need to make cities and counties and other things healthy so that the communities are healthy, too.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Jody Weiss with Tax Fairness Oregon. Like Marcia, I have questions about the idea. I think it's the job of the legislature to really evaluate the options that we put before counties. So the counties have the choice here whether they would want to do this. But counties have the choice about whether they should have enterprise zones or not. And we're still wondering whether that's an effective tool and trying to evaluate whether it's an effective tool even though it's going forward. The bill, I think, is hampered by the fact that the goals aren't clear. And it would be really hard for the Economic Development Department to come up with what the rules for this program would be, since there's no goal statement. There's also no sunset. So we could be setting something in place that we don't know what's happening with it. But I think the deeper questions are, why would we do this only for Oregon graduates? What's the point there? We're drawing into our state many out-of-state, highly educated people. Why would we disadvantage them if we were going to do this? How recently should the people have graduated? This could be a relocation ploy for people who are locating from other higher tax states or whatever because they want to come here, and they can. This is another grant they get. There's no statement in this bill for how long the taxes are going to be deferred or what the payment plan is going to be, or what the interest rate would be. I would imagine, since it's a deferral, there'll be some point at which we're inviting people into the equivalent of a balloon mortgage or an adjustable rate mortgage, the very kind of problem that has put many families and many in our world at risk right now. It doesn't seem like a good idea to say you're going to defer your taxes for 5 years and then you're suddenly going to be hit with them. So while in this bill the counties choose whether to use the tool or not, it seems to me that the evaluation of whether this tool is a good idea needs to happen in this building. I urge you to look at really seriously thinking, what would we be offering? We know that any bill we pass comes back to us with increased asks at later times. So this bill, for instance, doesn't say there'll be backfill from this income tax system to pay for it. But a couple sessions ago, we had a bill that asked us to backfill counties for the giveaways that we did with economic development zones. And so I think that that would be a likely thing in the future. And you really need to ask yourself, what's the goal here? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Sean Cleave, for the record, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, in support conceptually of House Bill 3057. I'd like to formally thank Representative Reed in taking a fresh approach to an old problem. Oregon Farm Bureau is very interested in identifying and implementing mechanisms to strengthen rural communities. Just last week, our executive committee was at an American Farm Bureau retreat, and part of that retreat was a report that detailed a paradigm shift for rural farmers that described a situation very well documented through some of the research conducted through the American Farm Bureau that rural farmers rely on the rural communities more than the communities rely on the farmers. And that was something that wasn't really believed or thought of prior to this report. So obviously you've heard quite a bit of testimony today regarding better definitions and clarifying intent, and I think that all good legislation deserves those discussions. Moving forward, and obviously in today's budget constraints, everything needs to be weighed heavily, but the Farm Bureau would be more than happy to participate in a work group, and just like to thank the committee again for hearing the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Reed. I'm sorry.
I'm not here.
Representative Freiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hesitated there for a but
it's
comment,
one of those mornings.
More a comment than a question. I think this is the kind of thing that the legislature should do more of. It's a different idea, it's a new idea, it's something that we ought to talk about. And I want to compliment Representative Reed for bringing that, and I want to compliment the chair for hearing this new kind of idea. Whether it turns out that we actually do it or not, it's some, you know, we ought to be talking about new ideas and new ways of looking at things. And I think that's something I wanted to say.
Thank you. Representative Reed, I think your work group is getting larger.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. That was part of the goal today, to uncover the things that need to be done. And I hope the folks heard me when I said that at the beginning. It does need more work, so
yeah.
I think that's fine.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on House Bill 3057? I see a couple of more coming. Thank you.
More questions, Mr. Chair, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. No questions, just a comment. It is a state property tax law, so we would have to provide for this by law to answer a question earlier. And I think it's clear that it would allow local governments to do this, and that would be needed in order for them to do it. So I think the concept is there, and it would just need a little more flesh. Yeah. And finally, I'd like to declare conflict of interest because I'm a graduate of the Oregon Institution. That's what I really came up here to say.
Thank you. I would note, to simply for the record, that because you're part of a very large group, the normal rule is that those kinds of conflicts don't need to be declared.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove. I'm with the Economic Development Department. No questions. Just wanted to state that when and where appropriate, we'd be willing to lend whatever level of expertise we have to any work group that may be formed. So.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else on House Bill 3057? I don't see anyone. With that, we'll close the public hearing on 3057. Thank you, Representative Reed, for bringing the bill to us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else for the committee this morning? Nothing's on our agenda. We'll see you tomorrow. Committee's adjourned.
Bill, you haven't thought...